This is special programming on the novel coronavirus from North State Public Radio. I'm news director Sarah Bohannon. Tonight, we're focused on the economy and how businesses in the North State are dealing with this pandemic. If you're a business owner in the region, we'd love to hear from you. Leave your comments about your experience on our website, mynspr.org, or call us on our message line. That's 433-9216. For Friday, April 10th, 2020, this is special coverage from North State Public Radio. That the economy would grind to a halt was hardly unsuspected once this pandemic hit. It's a fairly obvious result of ordering most of America to stay home from work indefinitely. Last month, emergency federal actions, massive loan and grant programs were launched, including a $349 billion fund businesses could tap to make payroll. But as the New York Times reported Thursday, promised loans, grants, and checks from the Small Business Administration are not appearing. Not even the Paycheck Protection Program, which expedited money meant to stave off layoffs. New claims for unemployment have broken all records, with job losses just in the last several weeks already exceeding totals during the 2008 recession. As lawmakers and economists debate a proper course of action on a national scale, we're taking the pulse of local businesses here in the North State. Tonight, we'll hear from five different businesses throughout the region and how they've been affected by the pandemic. We'll start in Chico, where earlier today, NSPR's Angel Hiracha spoke with Janelle Bauer and Heath Dewey of Tender Loving Coffee. The conversation started around whether or not they've reached out for assistance.
Theoretically, there's a lot of help out there. Practically, we haven't seen a lot of it yet.
So we, you know, have been filling out the paperwork and submitting the paperwork. And I think right now we're just in kind of a wait and see pattern as, you know, local banks try and catch up and as they try to process all of that paperwork. You know, one of the things that's so hard about closing the cafe is that you miss seeing your customers every day. You miss those relationships with people. But honestly, people have been awesome about reaching out on social media, about liking content, about sharing it, about just generally trying to continue that sense of support and connection. You know, we did open mic at the cafe, and we had someone this week reach out about wanting to host a Tender Loving open mic on Zoom as a way to keep that community going and also think about how they can continue to support us. So that's been really awesome to see.
Have any of your like landlords or vendors been flexible with the COVID-19 pandemic?
In general, I would say we've gotten a lot of support from our vendors, landlord, other entities that we have debt obligations to or liabilities to.
I do think one of the concerns that I have is sort of a little bit, it's been great to see people flexible now. I think we're also just sort of wondering what that future is going to look like.
Are you coming up with strategies at all? Like what you plan to do once this kind of slows down and people are able to go out there and, you know, go back to the business?
Yeah, operationally, our strategies sort of adapting to the current environment are to go more direct sales to our customers with bagged coffee, locally, regionally. We do have a free local delivery here in town. If you use the code Chico Local on our website at the checkout, we'll do a free local delivery of coffee to your address. Also doing more direct sales to customers outside of the area, trying to expand that model so that we're getting more coffee sales that are not specifically in Chico and they're more direct to people's homes where people are more comfortable purchasing from right now. Yeah, the grocery stores, supporting our grocery stores, making sure that we're keeping them fully stocked, that we're conveying to them our strategies for maintaining a clean wholesale environment. The coffees are kept clean and protected, wearing masks, gloves, sanitizing frequently. So supporting our grocery stores in that matter, in that means as well. And I think that as we, I wouldn't say that our strategy for the restaurant has coalesced yet, because it's really unclear when and how this all is going to happen.
Anything else you'd like to add?
We are at the farmer's market as well. We have a mobile trailer that we serve coffee from at the market. And that's the same protocols that we were implementing at the restaurant, we're now implementing at the market. And the employees who are there are some of our employees who are, you know, still implementing those best practices in that environment. We're really making sure that primarily our employees are safe.
I think also I would just say, you know, we opened the restaurant a month or so before the campfire. And so it's been a rough couple years. But, you know, even with the campfire, it does make me really optimistic about how we as a community are able to be, I mean, I know we use the word a lot right now, but be resilient, you know, and keep finding new and creative ways to go on and support each other and stay connected.
That was Janelle Bauer and Heath Dewey, owners of Tender Loving Coffee in Chico, speaking with NSPR's Angel Haracha. After weathering the unprecedented disruption during and following the campfire, Vince Clarkson, owner of Hudson's Appliance Center, is taking what could be a miserable doubleheader in stride. The business has been open for 57 years. NSPR's Mark Albert spoke to Clarkson earlier this week, first asking how everything is currently going at the company.
Very interesting, that's for sure. Very, very kind of challenging times over the last couple of years. Very, very fortunate that our business is a necessary, you know, item, essential, however you want to look at it. So we are staying very busy through all this. Obviously, with the disaster of the campfire last year, we have a lot of business ahead of us. And so all things considered, very, very fortunate to have a business and a commodity that people absolutely need, and probably more so now than before due to the fire. But it has significantly impacted our, you know, how we're doing business. It's definitely impacted the number of customers coming into our stores, and you know, employees, you know, nerves, and employees taking time off because they're not feeling good, and definitely change things. But we're still staying busy, and we're still here to take care of our customers, which is really good.
How is it affecting any kind of long-term prognosis in terms of your business, accounting goals, projections?
Well, we were actually going over the numbers, my wife and I, and she and I both own the business together. And so I think we're down anywhere from 14 to 21% this year compared to last year. So it's definitely affected us as far as that. But long term, I don't feel like this is going to have a huge impact on us long term. I think, like I said, we have a lot of people that, you know, are rebuilding up here on the ridge, and a lot of people that are anxious to get back in their homes. And, you know, even with the current crisis that's going on, people still need a refrigerator to keep their food cold, and freezers right now. I can't seem to order and take care of customers fast enough when it comes to freezers, washers, dryers, that kind of stuff. So long term, I think we're going to be fine. Short term, though, we definitely are struggling to, you know, keep up with the demand with minimal staff, and you know, trying to protect ourselves and protect the future customers is definitely challenging. But I think long term we're going to be okay. We just gotta get through this little hurdle.
If things continue like this for 6 months, are you still in business?
Yes. Yes, I do. I don't think I could say the same thing if this weren't following the campfire, and we didn't have, you know, so much construction going up here on the ridge. If this was just any random year, I don't think we would be able to weather that long of a storm. But with what's going on up here in Paradise, I think we're gonna be able to weather that storm, even if it did go 6 months. I think we are very, very fortunate to have business to keep us going. If we were to, you know, go 6 months, I don't think we would be sitting at 14 employees. I don't think we would be able to staff that many people with that long of a delay. But I don't think the business would go anywhere. No.
Is there anything else you'd like to add, or any good questions I should have asked and haven't?
One of the things that, you know, it's important for, I think, customers to understand that companies like us are taking procedures to protect ourselves and also protect the future customers when we go into homes. You know, my technicians are doing anywhere from 5 to 9 stops a day, probably on average. So we have a meeting every single morning with the employees, and some of, you know, key takeaways that I have in my employees is, hey, we are essential, but we're not invincible.
That was Vince Clarkson, owner of Hudson's Appliance Center in Chico and Paradise, speaking with NSPR's Mark Albert. We're going to take a quick break. We'll hear more from business owners around the North State when we're back. Stay tuned. This is special coverage on the novel coronavirus from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. When the outbreak started making headlines and some workplaces began closing, the initial reaction for some was to treat the whole experience as a stressful, unwanted staycation. As people flocked outdoors, often inadvertently forming groups, restrictions spread to beaches, state, and national parks. One center of recreation in the North State is the Turtle Bay Exploration Park, a nonprofit providing education and culture in the Redding area. As NSPR's Mark Albert found out from guest experience officer Carrie Ann Foster, a spike in visitors ended rather abruptly once the governor ordered people to stay at home.
The fateful stay-at-home order. We were expecting it to a certain level just by what was happening throughout the state of California. Like all things, it seems to start south and slowly work its way north. It came a little bit earlier than what we were expecting, but it still came as quite a shock to our teams, to our families, and to the public. The first few days, the phone rang constantly, folks looking for something to do, even though they were supposed to stay at home, because they were still looking for what they consider a safe place to come with their families and spend time. And it absolutely warms my heart that folks thought that Turtle Bay was one of those places that they could seek solace in. We envision ourselves as a cultural gathering place, so not being able to offer that to our members and to our guests really hit us on a whole different level. During the car fire, we were able to open our doors. We were able to open our doors for free and welcome everyone into Turtle Bay. Much to our curator of animal programs' chagrin, we allowed a dog into the park just because we wanted everyone to have that same welcoming experience. So our heart really goes out to the members of our community, as well as our team, our coworkers, our donors and supporters. It's been a pretty tough time.
Turtle Bay, I'm sure, relies on visitors. And with that stay-at-home order in place and social distancing required, I imagine admissions have practically disappeared. How have you been able to adjust And what have you been able to do, if anything, to boost revenue or economize?
It definitely took some regrouping on our part. And our team here really rallied together. It sort of took the weekend off to give ourselves a timeout, kind of take a pulse of what was happening. And then we regrouped to look to try to bring as much content online as possible. So trying to get our message, our educational programs, and just reach our public, that was paramount for us first. We had a plan in place as to what we would need to do, provided the park would be closed through the end of March. And so we kept as many employees on as possible through the end of March and immediately began reaching out to donors, supporters, grant funders, and doing a lot of research into what funding would be available or would be coming available to nonprofits, such as those items that are listed in the CARES Act and the Paycheck Protection Program. Then we unfortunately, as time went on, we realized we weren't going to be able to sustain that. We do have some revenue sources like our Adopt an Animal program, our membership programs, of course, donations to Turtle Bay, our plant sale. We do have some programs that we are able to keep alive without having guests or visitors come into the park. But we have taken a pretty substantial hit by losing out on those admission dollars. It is spring break, as we'd spoken about earlier, and we really were expecting one of our best springs ever. We have fantastic exhibitions that are currently dark right now with Treasure and John Schuler's Last Man Blues. And so we're trying to move all of our content online to try to meet the needs of our guests and visitors. But we are always, as with all nonprofits, definitely reaching out for donations to continue keeping Turtle Bay afloat and keeping us moving forward so that our doors can open.
How does this impact you long term, if at all? Or have you been able to even give it that kind of thought? This might be pretty premature at this point.
Well, we like to think that cultural enrichment is an essential service, just because we think that everybody needs a little extra appreciation for our world and their life every day. But long-term forecasts for Turtle Bay, I would use the words cautiously optimistic. I think that our administration has worked fairly diligently the last few weeks looking at what we expect in revenues versus what our costs are, and feel that we're in a slightly manageable position currently. That doesn't mean that couldn't change with a stronger current, longer quarantine times, a larger outbreak in Shasta County. There's definitely some unknown factor that we're still trying to work around and anticipate what those needs are going to be for the park. But we are, I guess I would just say again, cautiously optimistic that we're holding pretty steady right now. And I think it's all that most of us can do because it is such an unknown future. We're really thankful for that CARES Act. There was a lot of campaigning that was going on for nonprofits through local legislation going right up to Washington to include those nonprofits in that. And so we are really hoping that helps right the ship, as it were, down the road. So in the immediate forecast for Turtle Bay, we are okay without that CARES Act, but definitely hoping that and the continued support of our donors and our members, folks keeping those memberships up, getting those adopting animals, getting a river of turtles, whatever they can contribute is essential for the long-term forecast for Turtle Bay.
That was Carrie-Anne Foster, Guest Experience Officer at the Turtle Bay Exploration Park in Redding, speaking with NSPR's Mark Albert. For businesses whose workforce is plugged in most of the day, working remotely is now the new normal. But what about businesses that rely on physical work? Don Albright is the Director of People Operations at Carrier Family Farms in the community of Glenn. He spoke with NSPR's Ken Duvall about how this family-owned, multi-generational walnut grower and processor is adapting to the new realities of the COVID economy. Ken first asked how the company was doing.
I wouldn't say too badly. It's been primarily on two fronts, that having to do with sales, and then on the other front having to do with employees. On the sales side, it's just been more disruptive. A lot of our customers are overseas. And so once this pandemic started to kick in, there was a scramble to get as many orders on the water as we could. So orders that were normally on the books that we were going to ship months from now have already been shipped. And once we got their food supply filled up, there's a bit of a lull now, but we are starting to see an uptick of orders coming in into late spring. So overall, we're going to be a little down, but not too bad. I think the biggest impact has just been on our employees in general, in terms of communication, anxiety, what do we do? Are we going to stay open? You know, so on and so forth. So we've sort of methodically worked through those issues from the CDC recommendations through keeping running and social distancing in the facility and so on.
Have you had to lay people off, or you've been able to work around?
No, we're solid. And the only reason why I'm home is I self-quarantined. I'm due back in the office on Monday. No, as a matter of fact, we hired 17 full-time, fully benefited employees last week in our walnut processing facility in Glen. We're anticipating a big crop next year, and we've had a number of people on board for several months through some labor contractors, and we've identified some keepers. So we're sort of bucking the trend, and we've actually added headcount for all the right reasons.
Well, that's really good news. So it sounds like you've been able to operate pretty much as usual without making too many substantial changes.
Yeah, they've been relatively minor changes. We, you know, we're a food processing facility, so food safety. We're already accustomed to personal hygiene, sanitation. So just ramping that up several notches and then focusing on employee separations and, you know, alternating breaks and that sort of stuff. Those have been more day-to-day logistical issues that we've resolved.
And I probably should have asked this earlier, but to get you to describe a little bit about what Carrier Family Farms does.
So we basically got two sides of the business. We have a farming side. We grow walnuts, almonds, and rice. And then we've got a walnut processing plant as well. That's where most of our business lies. Carrier's been in business since 1890, and we've got the fourth and fifth generation operating the business.
Fantastic. So been around for a while, and as far as you can tell now, this health emergency is not going to put you out of business.
No. It's made it, for us, just a little more sticky to maneuver. And like I said, the first concern was with our employees as to what was going to happen, but we've addressed that, and they're actually extremely grateful to remain working. And like I said, we added 17 new folks to the team, and so that was a win. And our plans are moving forward. We're going to have a strong crop next year, and it's going to be all hands on deck come late summer.
Don Albright, Director of People Operations at Carrier Family Farms in the community of Glen, speaking with NSPR's Ken Duvall. The impacts on tourism from this pandemic are just plain staggering. Darlene Mathis is the co-owner of the McLeod River Mercantile Company, operators of the historic Mercantile Hotel in McLeod, along with a restaurant, general store, and cafe, remnants of the region's once enormous timber trade. While business in the shadow of Mount Shasta today is somewhat seasonal, Mathis told NSPR's Mark Albert that she and her family partners have always felt diversified.
We've gone through a lot. The last hard time we had, though, was in 2018 with all the wildfires surrounding us, you know. Mm. And so last year was a really good year. And this year was looking even better than last year in terms of the economy. We had so many bookings. We were already almost full in April. Usually the beginning of our season is closer to May. And this year, our season was really set to take off on April 1st.
And things have just completely dropped off, yeah?
Completely dropped. I had a 10-day retreat that was coming in on April 2nd. Completely dropped off. And some of the people were from Europe and some people from Australia. The whole thing canceled, and then they've tried to reschedule, but everything's so up in the air. And it affects not only us, but the other hotels in town.
As horrible as this epidemic is, from a business standpoint, it's also a tremendous nightmare.
Yeah, we also, this building is a large building. We also have tenants, and like the diner, we don't run that anymore. It's another mom and pop couple, and they just took over 2 months ago, and now this hit. They were trying to do to-go orders, but because no one's traveling, and so it's kind of hard for our small town to try to support all the businesses. So what they're trying to do now is like tonight, they're making dinner, and they've sold out for tonight, which is good. So that's what they started doing instead, is to have a set menu, and then people call in, and then that way they're not throwing away food.
Darlene, I have to imagine you've done some of the math and figured out if things don't turn around by a certain time, you might be facing real trouble. How long do you think you have?
Well, it's just like, wow. I had enough money still set aside for this coming month, you know? But, what I was really concerned is just the future. And I don't want to get a loan because I don't want to go into debt. But I went ahead and I signed up for the SBA loans and then in that PPP application grant. But the SBA loan, I was supposed to have a $10,000 bridge loan or something. We got the confirmation number when we first signed up. It's been over 2 weeks. They said that the money would be sent in like 3 days, but we haven't heard anything. And then the PPP application, it went out on Friday, April 3rd. I got that in within 48 hours, and by Monday, it was already too late, you know, they said. Well, they were inundated with too many applications, they said. So we don't know where we stand on that. So right now, we haven't seen any money whatsoever. And I think that's probably true for everyone right now. You know, I don't know if anyone's really received their $1,200 check that they said they were sending out. We had to lay off our employees because without a restaurant or a hotel or a store open, there's not much that they can do. You know, so they're on unemployment, but my workman's comp, those bills are still automatically taken out of our account. I've got one employee. I'm still trying, you know, I've got her on reduced hours and she comes in every couple days or so, but the rest are all unemployed right now and they're waiting to get their money.
That's got to be very difficult for them and also difficult for you. If you have good employees, you don't want to let them go because you'll need them.
Right. And we've had our employees 7 to 10 years. You know, we told them, you know, if they need something or if they need food or they need any kind of emergency advance or something, that we would help them with that. In the meanwhile, they're still waiting also. Everyone's suffering, so it's not just us. But hopefully we get, you know, this is over soon.
That was Darlene Mathis with the McLeod River Mercantile Company speaking with NSPR's Mark Albert. And that is your program for Friday, April 10th, 2020. If you have any thoughts for us, leave them on our message line 433-9216 or go to our website, mynspr.org. Tonight's special coverage was produced by Mark Albert, Ken Duvall, Christian Solis, Andre Bayek, and Phil Wilkie. Our technical producer is Matt Fidler. Thank you for being with us. I'm Sarah Bohannon, News Director at North State Public Radio, and this is Special Coverage. We'll be back on Monday. Until then, stay safe, stay informed, and stay tuned.